Good day, and welcome to the Match Group Reports Q3 2016 Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Lance Barton, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Match Group earnings call for the third quarter of 2016. On the call, we have Greg Blatt, our Chairman and CEO, and Gary Swidler, our CFO. They're both going to walk you through the Q3 investor presentation that we have posted to the investor relations section of our website, and then we'll open it up for questions. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you that during this call, we may discuss our outlook and future performance. These forward-looking statements typically may be preceded by words such as we expect, we believe, we anticipate, or similar statements. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, and our actual results could differ materially from the views expressed today. Some of these risks have been set forth in our earnings release and our periodic reports filed with the SEC. With that behind us, I'll now turn over the call to Greg.
Thanks, Lance. Hi, everybody. Good to be here reporting our fourth quarter as a standalone public company. All things considered, it's generally gone according to plan. Tinder's got great momentum. Our previously desktop businesses are completing their transitions to mobile-first businesses and coming through the drag that transition has created, and our outlook is strong. We're going to flip slides now from our presentation. We'll try to add color where helpful, but won't spend time reciting what's clearly on the page so we can get to Q&A as quickly as possible. Starting with slide four, obviously another strong quarter on PMC growth across the board. I'll note international continues to outpace domestic really for two reasons. One, Tinder is just a larger percentage of our international PMC than it is of our domestic PMC, and Tinder is obviously our fastest growing business, so that accelerates the relative growth rate. And even excluding Tinder, the international business continued to grow more quickly. Turning to slide five, Tinder continues to just do great, outperforming on PMC growth. I think at the beginning of the year, we talked about a goal of doubling PMC by the end of the year. That would get us to 1.6 million. Obviously, we ended Q3 at over 1.5 million. So we'll easily beat that beginning of the year target, frankly, if we haven't beaten it already. I think Q3 was a record for net adds. Really a couple things going on there. One is just continued strong performance in general, but there's also if you remember at the end of Q2, we sort of launched a new Tinder Plus set of features and merchandising, et cetera, which created a real conversion lift. And I want you to remember there's always a stock and flow effect when you do that. So there's an initial sort of surge in conversion. It then typically settles down higher than it was before the new features were launched, but lower than its sort of post-launch peak. So I think when you look at that and you combine it with the fact that Q4 are seasonally soft in the dating business season, I think looking ahead, you'd sort of look at Q4 more in line with sort of a Q1, Q2 sort of net adds than the Q3 one. Here you'll see we're giving you both ending PMC and average PMC. As you know, in general, our metric is average PMC. Due to sort of the early stage of Tinder, we've been providing ending PMC. I think in a couple quarters, we want to transition just back over to average PMC to keep things simple, but we wanted to give you both for a couple quarters just so that you could see them side by side. Flipping to slide six, I want to talk a little bit about our product strategy at Tinder. It is growing rapidly. It's very robust. This is a product business. As we've expanded this year, both in the senior level and across the board, our ambitions, our ideas, and our throughput have all increased substantially. And I think that, our product strategy is all about growth, and I just wanted to talk about a number of the different fronts that we're attacking it on. In the first bucket, which I've called under the hood, these are all things that, consumers don't really see or notice so much, but they're incredibly important. Obviously, security, integrity, spam, things like that are important. But when you think about just speed and reliability, the sad fact is that in many geographies, our app doesn't perform very well. People get knocked out of the funnel. It's slow to react. We are putting real resources against fixing that. And I think when you look historically at companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google, as they've sort of focused on speed and reliability, especially internationally, it's driven real growth. So we think this is a real driver for us over the next couple quarters. The next bucket, widening the top of the funnel. Again, these are things that may not seem that sexy, but we think have real growth potential. The first is an alternative sign up. Right now, you need to have a Facebook account in order to log in to, in order to create a Tinder account. That's generally fine in the U.S., but a lot of international territories where that's a big hindrance. Places like Russia, Japan, where we're starting to get real traction, Facebook doesn't have a lot of adoption, so we're just not available to a huge number of people. Even in the U.S. and sort of other developing countries, there are a lot of people who just don't like syncing up a dating product or, frankly, a number of products with their Facebook account. And so we think, again, that this will provide sort of real growth opportunity over the next coming quarters. Next, we're launching a web application. Right now, all we have is you have to have a native iOS or native Android app. That's the only way you can access our services. When you look at Match Group's other products, the vast majority of even their mobile usage happens on the web. Now, we recognize that the demos are different, and we don't expect that same ratio to hold. But our Tinder.com URL gets over 5 million uniques a month. And right now, we basically just have a message that says, you know, go download an app. And we are creating a fully functional web version of Tinder, both for desktop, but really for mobile. And again, we think this has the opportunity to really expand our user base. Not sexy, but I think just numerically going to be very significant. Product experience, which really is where, you know, most of the energy and sort of, or a lot of the energy and creative thought is, huge roadmap here. Obviously, this stuff tends to be competitive, so we're not going to go into much detail about it. But Tinder Social, which we launched a quarter ago, we're going to have some new iterations and evolutions of that coming out in the very near future. We've got lots of other, what I'll call, sort of use case expanding concepts in development that will come out over the next quarters. And obviously, we'll continue to do what I'll call bread and butter experience enrichment, like we did with our Tinder Anthem feature, which is powered by Spotify, and our recent photo optimizer feature. Those sorts of things will continue to come indefinitely. Finally, obviously, we spend a lot of time and energy on monetization. We just launched our Boost feature, a la carte. It was a few weeks late. You know, we'd hope to get it out at the beginning of October. It's still not fully rolled out globally, although it's close to there. We're sort of doing a staggered rollout. Really great early returns. We think going to be a significant contributor. And we're turning our attention to the advertising side. You know, we've been talking for a while about our struggles to get the resources necessary to do the tech work we need to grow that advertising business. We're making real progress there. We moved off LiveRail, which was the Facebook tech platform we had before. We successfully transitioned over to Google, and we're empowering our data management partnership and a whole bunch of other things, but there's still a lot of work to do in order to get the ad business where we want it to be. So just a sense of what I think is an unparalleled breadth and scope and variety of work being done as we continue to add tech and product resources. We really do think that, you know, this is the ultimate competitive differentiator. We don't think anyone will sort of keep up with us in terms of the rapidity and velocity of product innovation and evolution. We couldn't be happier with where we are right now. Flipping to the next slide, you know, we've talked a lot over the last year and a half about the transition to mobile on our previously desktop businesses and the downward pressure on conversion that that's had and the impact that has over the business. We've also talked a lot about the fact that, you know, over the course of the last year that we really see the mobile migration slowing. And that, plus the combination of our having reorganized in ways to free up more tech and product resources to work on mobile, should combine to start turning that conversion story around. I think this chart very much shows what we've been up against. You know, conversion is a fuzzy metric. A lot of things can impact it: traffic sources, brand mix, device mix. Sometimes you actually do product things that drive conversion down, but are good when you increase traffic to registration ratios, et cetera. So we don't track it quarter to quarter in a sort of mark to market way. But I think when you step back and you look at it over a long period of time, you can clearly see that you know, there is a big downward pressure here, a major headwind, which is now mostly behind us. I think, you know, this chart shows 30-day conversion, which is basically the ratio of registrations that convert to a subscriber within the first 30 days. That's a big part of our business. There are a lot of other parts of conversion as well. There's resubscription conversion. There's older cohort conversion, meaning later than 30 days. They're not all at the same place. We sort of focused on this one first, so this is where we've made the most progress. But the rest are tracking along, and I think that you know, it feels good to you know, over the last couple of years, be saying that this is what was happening and that this is what would happen, and I think it's clearly been borne out. We're making really good progress here, and we expect this to be, you know, the big leveling off in the downward pressure that we've had in these businesses over the last couple of years, I think, is ending, as we said it would, over the course of 17, and we're excited about sort of that return to growth that we see coming. Flipping to page 8, you know, we're a portfolio business. Many of you are in portfolio businesses, and as you know, it's rare that everything goes well. I thought it made sense sort of a year into being public to sort of take stock of what's gone sort of the way we hoped or better and what hasn't. We'll start with the underperformers. I think, you know, Match Affinity, which is the which is our collection of demographically based businesses. You know, Our Time, which is for sort of the 50-plus group, definitely our biggest, most successful business in that area. As we've been saying now for a couple quarters, there's been something of a downward drag on it. It's a great business. Its older demo makes it especially defensible, sort of immune to competition, a little slower on the transition to mobile than the other businesses, but something we're really excited about. In fact, we're launching a brand new TV campaign in the coming days. But as we've dug in, we've seen that we've definitely, in certain marketing channels, been over-calculating LTVs, lifetime values, and thus sort of effectively for the last year or so, overspending to some extent on marketing. We're now going to pull that back a little bit, which should ease down PMC over the next few quarters, after which we should be able to start building again. So there's going to be a natural sort of downward pressure on that business over the next couple quarters, just as we pull back marketing that on a lifetime basis wasn't as profitable as we thought it was. But again, long-term, very strong business. OkCupid, talked about it a lot. It's a great business. There's been a lot of management change there over the last year, a lot of self-inflicted wounds. We brought in great new leadership earlier this year, and you know, we're very confident we're on the right track, but definitely it was a knock out of our 16 expectations. And finally, advertising. You know, we've talked about this a lot. I think we changed leadership midway through this period, or sort of earlier this year, and I think in doing so, we came to grips with some things we hadn't fully understood. I think on the non-Tinder side of the business, I think we underestimated the downward pressure on ad impressions that the transition to mobile would bring. You know, as we've optimized our product for mobile, you know, conversion comes first, and that has taken a toll on ad inventory, and I think that we didn't fully sort of take that into account. I also think that we underestimated the industry-wide shift away from, or the speed of the industry-wide shift away from premium direct sale advertising, and that was a big part of the growth plan for that non-Tinder businesses. So I think we've definitely seen some pressure there. I think on the Tinder business, it's the same story, which is it's just been a question of getting the resources necessary to drive this. And the lesson is, you know, when you're a very small part of the revenue system and everything is sort of optimized around something else, it's just hard to get the resources that you need. And, you know, that's where we are right now. And we're getting them. We're creating dedicated teams. As I've said, we're halfway there now. We've made a lot of progress on the advertising side on Tinder. But, you know, I think we're definitely not where we thought we'd be. And I think it's fair to say that we'll be a little slower there next year than we expected as well. I think when we look ahead, we expect meaningful increase in ad revenue, but we don't really expect it to increase materially as a percentage of our overall revenue and think that's a little bit slower in coming. Hopefully there's some upside there, but after a year of sort of not being able to get it done as quickly as we want, we're tamping that down. On the other side of things, which is obviously where we spend a lot of our time, it's great. Tinder's a rocket ship. We've talked about that a lot, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more in this call. Match, doing a phenomenal job, really has gone to a mobile-first sort of business. I think the mobile products, while not all the way there yet, are certainly ahead of where we thought they'd be and are doing great. We're actually launching a new TV campaign there in the next couple days and have an incredibly exciting product strategy for next year. Meetic hitting on all cylinders, all-time high in PMC, should have a record year next year, really doing great across the board. Plenty of Fish and Pairs, two 2015 acquisitions, absolutely meeting or exceeding our acquisition plans, contributing real growth, great acquisitions, and will continue to be great growth drivers next year as well. And True continues to do its job as a solid EBITDA contributor. So overall, I think a bunch of performing businesses that are doing as well or better than expected, a few drags. I think overall we've definitely met our marks that we set for ourselves at the beginning of the year and are very well set up for 2017. So with that, I'll turn it over to Gary, who will talk about a number of things, including 17, and then we'll get to Q&A.
Thanks, Greg. If you turn over to slide 10, on the left-hand side, you can see dating revenue grew year over year at 22%, which was ahead of the range we expected on our Q2 call. Tinder, Plenty of Fish, and our international businesses performed better than we had expected. Princeton Review saw an unexpected revenue drop. Normally, there's a jump in SAT takers in the summer. While the kids are off from school, they prepare for the test in the fall once they return to school. We didn't see that jump this summer. This is a lingering impact that we've been talking about all year that's been felt industry-wide after the once-in-the-decade change in the SAT test earlier, although we've finally begun to see some of the test takers come back very recently. Princeton Review's revenue mix continues to shift, consistent with our plans. Its online revenue is up 17% in the quarter, while the lower margin but the larger offline revenue piece did fall by a similar amount, and that's what caused the overall revenue drop. We continue to stay focused primarily on Princeton Review's EBITDA, which turned positive in the quarter as we expected and was up 55% from last Q3. Overall, operating income grew 57% and adjusted EBITDA grew 34% to $111 million. That's also ahead of what we expected on our last earnings call. Strength at Tinder, Plenty of Fish in our international businesses, and lower than expected marketing spend drove those results. Our adjusted EBITDA margin improved strongly year over year, as has been the case all year long. It reached 35% overall and 37% in dating. The margin improvement is largely driven by the fact that a larger percent of our revenue is derived from brands with lower marketing spend. That's something we've been talking about all year. Operating expenses declined in the quarter by 7 points as a percent of revenue, and sales and marketing expense declined by 4 points. If you go over to the next slide, 11, this is the pro forma for Plenty of Fish. We are going to include this slide one more time after this quarter, and then we're going to get to the anniversary of the acquisition, which happened in Q4 of last year, so we won't need to go through the pro forma results anymore after the next quarter. But it is in here for completeness, and this is, as you know, how we look at the business. If you go over to slide 12 on ARPU, this has been a great story for us this year. I think you can see on the left-hand side, we've seen real stability in ARPU all through the year. It does move around a bit in a narrow range. It moved a little bit between Q2 and Q3, but what you can see in Q3, it's basically at or above the level it was at in Q4 of 15. So a great story with very stable ARPU. We did expect a decline in ARPU in 2016 compared to last year after we acquired Plenty of Fish and because of the tremendous growth we're seeing from Tinder, both of which are adding a lot of PMC at lower rates than our other businesses. And while we anticipated that pressure on ARPU through 2016, there's been much less pressure than we did expect. A lot of this has been because of the a la carte revenue which we're driving, which has really muted the mix shift-driven ARPU declines in 16. We think that overall ARPU will continue to vary quarter to quarter. It could still decline a little bit, but as we take an initial look at 17, and we'll talk about this more, but as we take an initial look at 17, we see a fairly stable ARPU for next year as well. If you go over to slide 13, this is a slide we're putting in regularly. We think the company has tremendous cash flow generating characteristics. We have low CapEx. We're expecting mid-50s free cash flow conversion in 16, which we've talked about. and yet we still trade at kind of a mid to high 4% cash flow yield. So we think that's still very attractive cash flow yield. And when you combine that with our growth characteristics on revenue and EBITDA, we think there's a few other companies that match up to those very critical metrics. On the right-hand side of the chart 13, you can see that we now have $231 million of cash on hand at the end of the third quarter. Our leverage continues to come down. And we think there are some things we can do in the debt markets now, given the run-up and strength in debt markets and the strength of our company, that could drive our debt costs down fairly meaningfully over the next little while. If you go over to slide 14 on the financial outlook, I'll spend a little bit more time here. I think the first thing is, now that we're in the fourth quarter, it's worth noting that our full-year dating revenue expectation has been very consistent from the fourth quarter of last year into the first quarter of this year. We put in a range that was roughly $1.1 to $1.14 billion. We still believe we're going to be near the midpoint of that range, so we've had very good predictability on our dating revenue all through this year. What it will boil down to is low 20% revenue growth, mid-teens for Plenty of Fish, a pro forma for Plenty of Fish, and that's all despite a little bit more weakness than we expected from OkCupid and Affinity, and our ad business ramping a bit slower than we expected. Tinder has obviously really exceeded expectations, as Greg talked about, and POF has done well. Our international businesses have done well, and so these have offset some of the soft spots that we've seen elsewhere in the portfolio. In terms of dating adjusted EBITDA for 2016, we're coming in at a $400 to $405 million range. That's in line with what we communicated in our last earnings call. When we laid out the outlook there, which we had for Q3 and Q4, we had sequential revenue growth ranges for those two quarters, and we also had a range of EBITDA margin expectations. If you work through all that math, you end up with a range of $401 to $406 million, and we're basically saying we're at $400 to $405, so essentially very close to the range that we had if you do that very precise math from the last call. If you look at Q4 specifically, we expect dating revenue to be in the middle of the range of 292 to 301 that you get if you work through all the math from the numbers in our last quarter slides. The key drivers of that are Tinder Boost, which, as Greg said, is being rolled out right now to both subscribers and non-subscribers at Tinder. We had originally planned to roll that out a little earlier in the quarter, so we thought we'd get a little bit more of a pickup than we're going to get. But we're, even though it got a little delayed, we're going to still get a nice contribution from the Tinder Boost feature in the fourth quarter, but it's not quite going to be as beneficial as we expected. Plenty of Fish also contributed strongly, should contribute strongly in the fourth quarter. So when you combine the Boost impact and Plenty of Fish performing strongly, this will help offset our lower ad revenue and the impact of some slightly lower marketing spend that we had in Q3 that will feel the effect of that in Q4. In terms of dating adjusted EBITDA in the fourth quarter, we expect that the margins are going to come in just slightly below the mid-40s range that we expected at the Q2 call. This is caused by a bit more continuing investment in Tinder than we had anticipated at that point. And also, the ad revenue is being offset by the Tinder direct monetization. That comes with IFB, so it's a little bit lower margin revenue. We've talked about that previously as well, but we're still seeing a little bit of that impact in the fourth quarter. And plus, we did have this marketing spend shift from Q3 to Q4. So overall, the second half of the year from an EBITDA perspective is going to be right where we expected, but we did have a little bit higher than we expected EBITDA in Q3. We're going to see that impact offset in Q4. The other thing just to point out, it's not on the slide, but Princeton Review, we expect it to continue to be slightly profitable in Q4. It should add about $1 million to our overall 2016 EBITDA. So that's a recap on 16 and the fourth quarter. Let me also turn to 2017. We're in the middle of our 2017 strategic planning process, and we still have a lot more work to do. We expect to be in a position to give you more precise and in-depth views on our Q4 call in late January. But at this point, we thought it would be useful to give you at least a glimpse of what we're seeing so far in the dating business. On the revenue front, as you can see on this slide, we believe we can achieve 15 to 20% growth over 2016. Tinder will continue to perform very strongly, as will Plenty of Fish, and we'll get increasing contributions from most of our other dating businesses. We think we're well positioned to deliver that kind of growth again in 2016. In terms of the EBITDA line, it's a little bit harder to be precise about that at this point in time, but we did want to go through a few of the things that will affect where we come out on EBITDA. There's really three or four key areas of discretionary spend which we're analyzing and that are going to affect where we come out in 17 from an EBITDA standpoint. The first is at Tinder, where clearly it's a case of investing into strengths. We've seen a fair amount of Tinder headcount growth this year, mostly in product and technology, and we expect to continue that next year. We're just not sure to what extent. We're also loading in a much larger budget for next year for Tinder on marketing and promotion. It isn't typical Match-style advertising, which is why we put the word marketing in quotes on slide 14, but it's more related to product launches, PR, and things like that. It's really devoted to drive international growth and to help spur interest in the products as we roll out new product developments. Away from Tinder, we've been saying for a while that as conversion improves, we'll increase marketing spend after a down year in 2016. We are anticipating a relatively significant marketing increase next year, and that always creates in-period market contraction because of the deferred revenue treatment. We intend to deploy more of this spend early in the year to maximize its impact in our seasonally strong period. We've also built in some budget in 2017 for investment in new businesses. We invested heavily in Tinder as we built it up over a several-year period. We haven't done much of that over the last couple of years, and we plan on starting that again next year as we look to fund some ideas we've been developing. So overall, we'll see how this all plays out. We know you're eager for more details, and we'd like to provide them, but we're still working through the process. We'll talk about this more next quarter. What we can say at this point is we're confident in solid revenue growth and these areas that we're looking to invest in and invest into our strengths and where we think it makes a lot of long-term success. Makes sense for the long term. If you want, we can now open the line up for questions.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our first question from Brandon Ross. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question, guys. Just wanted to know, on Tinder, with you guys exceeding your expectations in subscriptions and microtransactions, I was wondering why dedicate resources to advertising at all when it may undermine the consumer experience? We found that consumers don't like advertising on mobile, and you're so successful on subscriptions so far. Thanks.
Thanks, Brandon. I think the first answer is we will not, one of the variables in the business we've said all along is that as we put in place the technology to be able to sort of start running real advertising volume through, the first thing we're going to do is test it, and we're going to test it for consumer impact. So I think the basic premise of your question is absolutely right. We will not run advertising in a manner or at a frequency that is likely to, or not as likely to, that will have demonstrated itself to be adverse to the consumer experience at all. We have confidence that we can do that in a way that will not have that impact. But as I said, we've sort of tamped down the numbers a little bit as we've looked ahead, in part to be conservative to account for that, in part because of the timing of getting it all going, all of which is related to, as you say, the success we're having on alternative sources of revenue. So I don't think it needs to be either or. I think there is a level of advertising at Tinder that will not adversely affect the experience. I think what I'd say is that the success we've had in the other categories has made it less imperative to nail that precise level of advertising down as early as we might otherwise have done. And it's one of the reasons why sort of going through that exercise keeps getting pushed back a little bit.
Great, thanks. And one more quick question. On the launch of web for Tinder, is that a margin opportunity for you guys? Do you think even in the United States, say, you could drive consumers from the app to mobile web to potentially avoid Apple and Google taxes?
I would call that a gem of an upside. I think it really depends on what kind of conversion we end up getting on the mobile web. You know, in our other businesses, as we've talked about, mobile web tends to convert not as well as the native app. And, you know, as we've said, in certain of our businesses, as we've improved the mobile web, we have gotten to the point where it is economically better to sort of keep people on mobile web as opposed to the app. And I don't know where it's going to end up at Tinder. We're certainly not factoring that into our sort of thinking. But lots of things are happening with the mobile web. Mobile browsers getting much better. I think the experience is getting richer. Frankly, I think to some extent, I think the mobile web is becoming more competitive over time with the native applications. And as that happens, that should be a natural sort of margin enhancer. But we're certainly not building anything like that into our near-term numbers.
Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Brent. Next question.
We'll take our next question from Eric Sheridan. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much for taking the questions. First one, understood on 17, and it's still early how you think through this, but when we think through the numbers and investors look at it outside looking in, how should we think about what a dollar invested in the business in 17 and beyond and what that does to the arc of revenue growth? How are you thinking about ROI developing as you look at some of these investments you're going to make as we move from 16 into 17? And then maybe one on the balance sheet, you continue to bring the leverage down. Any update on where you're comfortable getting the leverage to and how that might inform the way you think about capital long-term. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. I think it depends on the buckets. I mean, let's take the buckets of incremental spend separately because I think, I want to expand a little bit on what Gary talked about in terms of the margin issues for next year. I think this business is in a margin expansion phase, naturally. Tinder is in a margin expansion phase, and the non-Tinder business is in a margin expansion phase. There are a number of things that are discretionary, but we think smart, that we think will have the near-term impact of sort of offsetting, to some degree, that expansion. And we do them for different reasons, and they have different predictability of ROI. So, sort of the easiest one is the increase in marketing spend in our non-Tinder businesses, right? That's something we've got a long track record of doing. Notwithstanding the fact that we've recently discovered that in our time business we were overspending a little bit. You know, I want to be clear on that. You know, that's you know, maybe we're getting 98 cents back on a dollar instead of $1.05. So it's not, you know, we're not. There's very little waste that goes on in our marketing spend. And in general, I would say that, on an LTV basis, we tend to expect a, solid double-digit return on that sort of marketing spend, you know, somewhere between 20 and 40% positive ROI on that spend. You don't get all that in year, and so it tends to be margin constricting when you rapidly increase that spend amount. But that is sort of solid. You know, in an ideal world, we are gradually increasing spend every year at increasing conversion levels, and that's what fuels sort of margin expansion and growth in these businesses. But when you do a sudden surge like we're doing next year, there is margin contraction there. In terms of investing in new businesses, that's obviously so speculative. You know, when you do that, sometimes you get a positive return. Sometimes you don't. But, you know, when you get a hit like Tinder, it, you know, is astronomical return. So we probably went net on Tinder, don't quote me, although you will, probably $20 million, I don't know what it was, a small amount of net money in before we, you know, started cranking positive. So on that sort of thing, you've got, you know, huge returns. So that's something that because of the speculative nature, we will keep limited. But we think it's money well spent in a period of what we consider to be real strength. Then you get to the two Tinder factors, and here it's just much harder to say. I think, Tinder is still a startup. We are doubling headcount every 9 months, or at least we doubled headcount over the last 9 months, or whatever it was. We believe that product is the future of this business, and, as we sit here and we increasingly, we have a great luxury of the further we go, the more things we see to do that we think are exciting and growth driving. And so we tend to be expanding resources to meet those things. It's very hard to really at this stage convert that into real ROI thinking. It's very hard to know each project that you do, what kind of incremental effect that has on revenue. But we are absolutely committed to continuing to feed that product beast because we think it is the ultimate driver. I will also say that in the scheme of these things, the increase in headcount in terms of dollars isn't that big. You know, on a quarterly basis, it adds up. But when we look ahead to next year, you know, that is the number that we'll have there is sort of it's not the major force in constraining the margin expansion. I think the biggest one and the one that is frankly the most speculative is, again, this quote-unquote marketing. You know, the reality is that we have grown this business until very recently from L.A. with intermittent and remote sort of concentration on international expansion. Haven't had a dedicated team. We haven't had dedicated efforts. Nonetheless, our growth has been great. And so there are sort of two points of view there. One is, well, keep doing what you're doing. You don't have to do anything else in order to drive that growth. The other is, we're too early to have this kind of margin expansion. There are a whole bunch of things that we can think of that we think are good ideas to replicate the kind of promotional infrastructure that we have in the U.S. in foreign markets, and we ought to take this opportunity to do it and see what happens. The reality is I don't know exactly what we're going to find. I'm sure some of the things we do are going to be very positive. They're going to increase acceleration of MAU growth, and we're going to double down on them. I'm sure there are going to be some things we do that aren't going to be that great. We don't really have a clear playbook for doing this in a business that isn't a traditional marketing business. But we think the opportunity is so big, and we think that you know, especially on the international side, so untapped, that not to put the effort into it and see what happens in a period of such strength is just it just doesn't make any sense. So you know, our philosophy has always been to not spend money in order to create momentum, but to spend money into existing momentum, and that's very much what we're doing here. I think, you know, when you add it all up, you know, I think that you know, I think it's unlikely that we're worse than flat on margins, but I think that to the extent we find year over year, but I think to the extent that we find real opportunity here, we're going to spend into that. We don't think any of this stuff is long-term margin constraining. We think this is money well spent so that when the margin continues its expansion, it will be on a larger user and revenue base. And that's very much what we're focused on right now. We think we've got sort of a unique global opportunity here in a growing category to continue to maintain and enhance our leadership position, and that's what we're focused on doing.
I think, Eric, your second question was about the balance sheet, and you know, we don't have really any changes to our strategy around that. I think we've been pretty clear that we don't want to stockpile cash. We carry a reasonable amount of debt. We're very comfortable with the amount of debt that we carry, but we're going to use our cash to chip away at it. We haven't quite paid down debt yet, but we've been building up the cash, but we're in position to do that if we want to. And we will chip away at it over the course of the next little while. We've targeted gross leverage under 3x. We're going to be there pretty shortly. Obviously, we don't think this is the right time to do buybacks given our low float. Dividends probably short-term don't make sense for us either. You know, we could be opportunistic on M&A, but we're not particularly focused on that given all the opportunity we have internally. At some point, we'll find something interesting to buy. But for the foreseeable future, we'll gradually chip away and continue to bring our leverage levels down. That's really what we're going to do with the balance sheet, and that's been very consistent.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Next question.
And we'll take our next question from John Blackledge. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. A couple questions. So in terms of the core match trends, ex-Tinder, it looks like North America subs were down about 80,000 in 3Q, international plus 60. Just wondering if our math is right there and how that should trend in the fourth quarter. And then, you know, per Greg's comments, with the sudden surge in kind of non-Tinder marketing spend, can core match get back to mid to high single-digit sub growth in 17 or beyond? And then just one other question, percentage of Tinder revenue that's a la carte, and with Boost being offered to subs and non-subs going forward, are all the a la carte products going to be available for non-Tinder Plus subs? Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of whether your math is right, I don't know.
I checked his math this morning that he had in his report. And, go ahead.
Well, I don't know how you
yeah, no,
go ahead.
I mean, based on how we disclose it, his
right.
math was correct.
Okay. I think, look, we have, on North America PMC, Q3 was always going to be sort of the trough in our sort of turnaround, and we think on an average, a year-over-year sort of basis, and we think, again, in terms of year-over-year PMC comparison, and we think that's the case. We do think our turnaround that we've talked about is, you know, as you can see from the conversion chart and the fact that we're going to be ramping up spend is still very much directionally on track. I think obviously the softness we had in OkCupid and in our time this year and our sort of pullback on marketing spend there, I think sort of potentially delays that sort of crossover point. At the same time, we're ambitious that we can reallocate a bunch of that spend to Match and to other places profitably. So I think, you know, that's something we're going to have to figure out over the next, two or three quarters. But certainly the overall directional trend is right, and we do expect it to cross over next year and return to growth. I think will it return to mid to high single digit growth next year? No. I think we've always said that sort of 16th was a trough, 17 is when we start getting it going again. I do absolutely believe that the non-Tinder businesses should be able to grow mid to high single digit PMC on a longer term basis. We see it happening at Meetic. Again, you know, Meetic is doing great. Meetic is having that kind of sub-growth, and Tinder is growing robustly in Europe. I mean, it's not terribly different than what we have here. So, and you've got Badoo and Lavoo and Hinge. I mean, it's a very competitive environment. So we do think that each of these businesses is sort of transitioning through this conversion trough at different paces for different reasons. But long-term, we continue to have the exact same outlook that we've had on the growth potential of those businesses. I don't think we disclose the relative contributions of a la carte and subscriber revenue. Obviously, to date, until very recently, we've only had one a la carte feature, which is Super Likes, and that's only been available to subscribers. Boost is our first sort of foray into a la carte transactions for subscribers and non-subscribers alike. So far, so good, but too early to sort of plot out a long-term revenue mix between the two. As I've said in the past, sort of the decision to make something a a la carte feature or a subscription feature is really tactical. I mean, right now, for instance, with both Super Likes and Boost, you get a certain amount of them as part of your subscription, and then you pay for more, and you could reconfigure those 10 different ways to shift revenue from subscription to a la carte. So I think of that as being pure pricing optimization, and that will occur and sort of go up and down over time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Heath Terry. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Just curious, in the commentary around sort of the lifetime value calculation, how much of that has been deterioration of that lifetime value? And I realize this is only, you know, relative to one sort of small segment. Is it you know, related to mobile? Is it related to just shorter lifetime on that particular platform, given the demographic? Just sort of curious what the math behind that change in LTV is, and then on Tinder and the commentary that you had around mobile advertising. I guess somebody sort of referenced a similar question earlier, but you know, is there a sense that that advertising on Tinder is going to have the kind of demand that you're expecting for it, just given the broader, I think, weakness in sort of run of mobile advertising that we see, you know, not just within dating, but you know, kind of across everything that's non Facebook, Google, and a handful of other sites.
Okay. In terms of the LTV, LTVs have been going up across our businesses. And I'm including at our time. I think what really happened is that we overcalculated an increase in LTV and marketed against it, meaning we made some product changes. They increased LTV, but there were some downstream, there was some pull forward involved, and our general formulas didn't sort of pick it up as well as it should have, which is a mistake, again, we rarely make. I mean, we pride ourselves on measurement in these areas and, you know, spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year and over the years have tracked it very well, which is frankly why it was frustrating even with just several million dollars to see that we were sort of doing it wrong. So I think that the LTV trend overall is up. It's driven by it's driven by a combination of pricing, and there's really been very little change in duration. I think, again, that's the LTV of a subscriber. You know, as conversion has come down over the last few years, the value of a registration, by definition, has come down a little bit. And so you sort of measure LTV both on the registration side and on the subscriber side. On the subscriber side, it's continued to go up. On the registration side, it's gone down, which has been an increase in LTV, partially offset by a decline in conversion. And as we showed you in that chart, that's reversing itself and sort of shifting forward. So you know, the biggest macro trend that we've had has been on the conversion side, driven by the mobile shift. And again, we're sort of putting that mostly behind us. On the advertising demand side, I think you're certainly right. I mean, it's sort of just everyone knows that in this sort of mobile world, there's been a few large sort of advertising players who demand most of the attention. And I think that's certainly a hindrance to Tinder if it were sort of an advertising-only business that was entirely predicated on building all its revenue that way. I think starting from the base that we are, I think we see plenty of demand to grow our ad revenue meaningfully in a way that doesn't, to the earlier question from Brandon, doesn't sort of undermine the user experience. But we're going to figure that out over the next year as we begin to sort of test a higher volume of advertising. But we think we're a ways off from that sort of macro demand concentration sort of being a real impediment to our being able to meaningfully grow that business.
Great. Thanks a lot.
And we'll take our next question from Dan Salmon. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Greg, when you look at the outperformance of Tinder PMCs, as you discussed, versus your original forecasts at the beginning of the year, can you dive in a little bit to the demographics? Are you seeing younger users more inclined to pay? Is it older users picking up the app in the first place? Just a little color on that would be great. And then second, on the advertising rollout, you discussed sort of getting the back end set by moving over from LiveRail to DoubleClick. I'm just interested, sort of, what are the near-term priorities now? Is it filling out a sales force, agency relations, or is it really now diving into the ad product and starting to run a little bit more? Thanks.
All right, thank you. On the PMC trends, I think it's been strength across the board. I think it's been sort of uniform outperformance in terms of both geography and age demo against our initial expectations. I think part of it is we haven't really screwed anything up, meaning most of the things we've done have worked, and they've worked really well. And you always build in some level of, well, this won't hit or this won't whatever, and I think we've executed really well. I think that the product has continued to keep pace with the user's demands, and it is proven to be a very, very well-monetizing, well-renewing, well-retaining sort of product. And I think some of that stuff you just don't know until you have some time behind you. So I think that's gone really well. On the advertising side, we did, as I think I said last quarter, we sort of built up our human infrastructure maybe a quarter or two in advance of what we needed to, just because the technology side wasn't keeping pace. So certainly don't need to build up a sales force in any meaningful way at this point. I think it's about testing ad units frequency, getting the right supply in the door, both direct and some level of third party, and having the volume to sort of test the frequencies, the cohorts, et cetera. And as we said now to a number of questions, we're not going to rush it. We're going to make sure it doesn't hurt customer experience. We're confident that we can do it in a way that won't. Again, I think it's great sort of engaging but not interrupting advertising, but we've got to nail down viewability and the right sort of role of video and all these things. And so we're going to do this in a way precisely because we've got such great revenue traction everywhere else, where we're not going to trip on ourselves in terms of the user experience.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
And we'll take our next question from Douglas Anmuth. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the question. Greg, I was hoping to get your latest thoughts on whether Princeton Review is strategic to your business and whether you would actually consider some strategic or structural alternatives here. And then also, can you help us understand the normalized growth rate for Plenty of Fish better just as it fully lapped here in October? Thanks.
Thank you, Doug. On TPR, I think, you know, Gary talked about the performance. Obviously, they're on a strategic basis. There are a bunch of things that are happening there that we're really excited about. I think some deterioration in the legacy business is forcing the mobile transition faster, I think, than we had expected, and there's always some friction there. I think in terms of whether it's strategic, you know, you can get tied up in those words. I think, obviously, it's not the dating business. The dating business is our main focus. I think that, and so therefore, by definition, it is less strategic. As to whether we'd consider anything, I think the best way I'd say it is, you know, I think it will be less surprising for something to happen there than in any of our other businesses, but I'm not going to predict any transaction happening. That's not sort of the way we do things. I think we continue to believe in that business. We think it has a lot of upside. We don't think it's a meaningful distraction. At the same time, it is definitely not central to what we spend most of our time focusing on.
Any color on Plenty of Fish?
Sorry. Again, we don't go business by business. I think that, as I've said before, I think that we expect our non-Tinder businesses to be able to grow in the mid to high single digits PMC long term. We think it will be somewhat less than that next year, and Plenty of Fish is probably the fastest growing of those businesses next year. So you can triangulate from those things I've already said to the best of your ability, but we really don't want to. The portfolio makes it very hard to sort of give out growth rates on a business by business basis.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Craig.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Ross Sandler. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just can you give us an update on the overall size of Tinder on a user or DAU basis? And then as you start rolling out some of these new features, you've been rolling out the paid products now for a number of quarters. How does the retention rates look in some of these cohorts? And how does the U.S. and the international markets differ from a retention standpoint? And then Gary, on the 17 outlook, just want to make sure we're still on track to see the non-Tinder legacy plus POF EBITDA grow in 17. Just want to confirm that. Thank you.
On the DAU-MAU question, again, we don't disclose it. I can tell you it continues to grow. Both DAU and MAU continue to grow nicely. I think in terms of retention, you know, unfortunately, when you roll out revenue features, you can see impact very sort of instantaneously on the ecosystem. I think with some of these other features, it's less clear. I think certainly overall retention and reactivation is sort of reactivations continue to increase. Retention has generally been stable over the last few months. It's been sort of up and down. We've had some bugs that have brought it down, and then some lifts that have gone up. So it's sort of been a little all over the place. But in general, MAU and DAU continues to increase. DAU to MAU continues to stay generally stable. And I don't have I'm not aware and don't have in front of me any meaningful differences between in general, the U.S. and Europe tends to act relatively consistently on those metrics, with the rest of the world being a little bit more all over the place. But in general, I would say that those metrics have been stable. Growth has been good, and those metrics have been stable.
And then I think in terms of your 17 question, you know, we've talked about single-digit PMC growth in the other businesses. It translates to similar levels of revenue growth as well as modest EBITDA growth. So that's what you should expect for 17 across those businesses. Obviously, we've also talked about, you know, we're spending up significantly on marketing, so we'll factor that in.
EBITDA growth in those businesses will be less than revenue growth because we are increasing the marketing spend meaningfully, but we still expect to have EBITDA growth in those businesses next year.
Okay, maybe we have time for one more question.
We'll take our last question from Chris Merwin. Please go ahead.
All right, great. Thanks. I just had a couple questions. So for Tinder next year, you know, in terms of the various pieces of growth, do you think the bigger driver is top of funnel traffic growth, which is, I guess, is going to be helped by marketing, or is it also driving conversion and increasing the paid penetration rate for that app? And then a second question, and this is just a follow-up from earlier, in terms of the conversion headwinds for the core business, I think you said that those are mostly behind you next year. So in order to get back to high single-digit growth over the long term, is that purely a function of, you know, more efficient marketing spend, or are there still some conversion tailwinds there? Just trying to understand the pieces of that. Thank you.
Okay. On the first question, I think we've got a bunch of things driving top of the funnel growth. I think marketing, in many ways, is the most speculative of them. So, you know, we certainly expect we have top of the funnel growth right now. We've got good MAU growth. We expect our continued product iteration in terms of the core features that we're rolling out, like social and its iterations, are a big part of it. Then you also have these more technical things like improving performance, web app, native auth. So all those things should continue to drive top of the funnel growth. In terms of whether the top of the funnel growth is sort of the bigger driver of revenue growth next year than continued monetization, I haven't done that math. My instinct is that top of the funnel growth tends to have more of a deferred impact, meaning we're still very early in the monetization sort of stage of things, and that tends to drive very rapid growth. I think the way our unlike the Match business, for instance, where the big majority of new subscriptions take place in the early days of a user's lifespan, Tinder, it's much more widely distributed across sort of the age of a registration. I don't mean the age of a person, but how long someone has been on Tinder for. So you sort of get you get revenue payback from user growth much quicker on Match than you do on Tinder. That's just the nature of a soft paywall business versus a hard paywall business. So I think they're both incredibly important. One tends to have more longer-term effect and one more near-term effect, but I haven't calculated the relative mix for next year. In terms of conversion headwinds, as I said on the earlier slide, the 30-day conversion, which is sort of near-term conversion, is doing very well. I also, as I just said, that is the biggest part of conversion in these businesses, but it's ahead of some of the other businesses, some of the other parts of conversion, be it resub conversion, older cohort conversion, et cetera. All of those things go into sort of driving that subscriber growth. So I think, as we've said throughout, it's going to be over the course of 17, which is as we increase marketing spend and as those things follow behind on conversion, where you start to see that real return to growth. And, you know, what drives more efficient marketing in part is improvement in those conversion metrics. Also, you know, we've got new creative and that sort of stuff coming, and it's somewhat dependent on that, but it's mostly driving those metrics. So that will happen over the course of 17. They're all sort of following that same direction, driven by the slowdown in mobile and that reallocation of resources to mobile product work.
All right.
So I guess that's it. Thanks a lot, guys. Again, we're excited about where we are right now. We're excited about 17. You're going through this planning process. A lot of exciting things on the product roadmaps, both at Tinder and at Match and some of our other businesses. And we think it's going to be a great year. Really excited about it. Look forward to talking to you guys next quarter.
This does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at any time and have a wonderful day.